This is Katie Dunleavy with My Chronic Illness and Me. As someone who's struggled with chronic illness for more than 15 years, I've often felt incredibly isolated in my journey. Now, as a coach for others dealing with chronic illness, I've realized I'm not alone in feeling that way. There just aren't a lot of forums out there where people can connect about their experiences with chronic illness. So, this is That Space, a place where we can educate each other about different illnesses, dispel myths, and, most importantly, share our stories. Let's dive in. Hey everyone, today I'm talking to Tim, who lives in Canada and who runs the organization Invisible Condition. Tim experienced his first symptoms of Crohn's disease when he was in his teens, and ever since has been juggling periods of relative calm with periods of extreme flare-ups and the need for multiple surgeries. He recently left his career in the private sector to start Invisible Condition, which exists to help people living with conditions that are not easily recognized and seen, like literally invisible, tell their stories and advocate for their needs. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Hi, Tim.
Hey, well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks so much for reaching out. I'm so excited to get to talk to you and for other people to hear about the work you're doing.
Yeah, I'm excited about the work I'm doing. I could probably take hours and hours of your time and your listeners' time explaining what we're up to. But I'm just really excited to share my journey with Crohn's disease and my invisible condition.
Awesome. Okay. Why don't we get started by you telling me a little bit about yourself? And also then I'd love for you to share about the organization that you started.
Yeah, a little bit about myself. I live in a suburb of Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. If you've never been, you're missing out. You got to come. Not now. We're recording it in rainy season, so it's pretty dreary in our area. But I'm a father and a husband. I've got two kids. And what else about me? I love the outdoors. So anytime I can, when I'm not dealing with a flare-up, I'm outside. You know, something me and my son have taken on is our morning walk. So between 6:30 and 7 every morning. My son is 10, but we get up and go for at least a half an hour walk in our neighborhood. And so a little bit about the work I'm doing. So I mentioned I live with Crohn's disease. I also live with arthritis. And I'm building a nonprofit, not from the nonprofit world at all. I come from corporate world. But I'm building a nonprofit called Invisible Condition. So the website is invisiblecondition.com. And our purpose is to end the stigma of invisible conditions by empowering voices and igniting social change. So that's what we're focused on.
Well, that's awesome. I can't wait to learn more as we dive in. How old is your other child? You said your one son is 10?
Yeah, my daughter is 6. And it's fascinating. They're such different people, different personalities, different outlook on life. My son is cautious and reserved, and he loves to think deeper than I would think I was at 10 years old. Where my daughter is just, our neighbor describes her as a firecracker. She's like just out there, big personality, and just, yeah.
So isn't it funny how siblings can be like so different?
Yeah, so different. we didn't raise them any different as babies. I remember taking my daughter out for a family meal at a restaurant, and my son, we used to take him out all the time. When he was little, waiters, waitresses would comment on how well behaved he is. And so we were like, oh, we're going to take our daughter out. She was a disaster. She was throwing stuff, grabbing stuff. And we're like, okay, I guess we're eating in for a while. So such different personalities, even though we're raising them the same, you know, in the same house.
So funny. Yeah. How'd you get into the routine of taking a morning walk with your son? I love that.
Yeah, I throughout the pandemic, working from home, I needed a commute. I missed my commuting time. So I implemented a before and after work commute, which was a walk. We are fortunate enough to live close to the ocean. And so every morning and afternoon, I'd go for a walk. And throughout the last 6 months or so, my son has been really struggling just with some anxiety, and he asked to come along in the mornings. And I thought, oh, sure, why not? So now it's just part of our routine. Even when he doesn't want to get up early, he's often downstairs before I am and just waiting for me. He's like, Dad, are we going to go? And it could even, you know, like the day we're recording this, it was a shorter walk. It's pouring rain. So we did a 15-minute walk instead of a usual half an hour. But it's just our time to connect and bond, and also could plan for his day. And I, you know, use a lot of tools like reframing, and reframing questions is something big for him, but also for me is something that I struggle with, is you get caught in the negative of the what if, especially living with a chronic illness, chronic condition. It's like, well, what if? And so how do we reframe that into, well, what if is often a negative, but how do we frame it into a positive?
What are the good things that could potentially happen?
Yeah, there are good things. It's not just all doom and gloom, right?
It's such a special connection that you guys have. Have you noticed any difference in his anxiety or anything like that since you guys have been doing that?
Oh yeah. If we don't go for a couple of days, we notice it. My wife and I will notice how he will have a lot more questions, a lot more questions about what's going to happen or what's happening, or at school or even at home. And so it's something I think, you know, I hope we continue doing. I hope he thinks it's still cool enough to go for a walk with his dad when he's in high school.
I hope so too.
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
So you mentioned at the beginning that you live with Crohn's disease. Can you share a little bit about, like, how did that come about and when, and what's your sort of like origin story with your illness?
Yeah. Oh, Crohn's disease. Somebody asked me how long I've lived with Crohn's, and that would just might date me, I think. I would say over 30 years I've lived with Crohn's.
Wow.
So it showed up in my teens, and doctors thought
early.
I was experiencing a lot of excruciating pain in my abdomen, and the doctor thought it was my appendix. Everything showed that there was something going on in that, on the lower right side. So scheduled for surgery, doctor went in and was apparently like, oh, his appendix is fine. There's nothing wrong with it. So they took it anyways. He thought, well, I'm here, I might as well take it out. It's apparently not needed.
And then
he did a little bit more exploration. And that's when the conversation of Crohn's disease started. So quite some time ago. And for those who don't know what Crohn's is, it's an autoimmune condition, you know, in its simplest terms. It's an autoimmune condition where your body basically attacks itself and in your GI tract. So it'll attack the healthy tissue and causes bleeding and inflammation and discomfort in your GI tract. And so it could start anywhere from the very top, your mouth, esophagus, all the way down to the very bottom. And typically causes is inflammation and thickening of your intestine. Mm. And so if it's out of control, what happens is if your intestine becomes inflamed, it could cause lesions, could cause ulcers, and it could cause scarring. And so out of control for a long period of time, it also causes narrowing of that intestine. And with narrowing, you think of, well, how does food digest? How does food pass? And so it's pretty serious, especially if you can't consume food.
Yeah. I mean, and Crohn's, correct me if I'm wrong, is one of those conditions, like very particularly, right, where someone can have very mild symptoms all the way to, like, it can be completely incapacitating. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. I've met people who have said, oh, I had Crohn's once. And it's like, well, Crohn's is incurable. And so maybe it was a mild flare-up and it had gone into remission, because that's what autoimmune conditions do, is they show up and disappear at random times. And it could be as serious as you need to remove all of your intestines. And and that doesn't cure anything. It doesn't solve the issue of Crohn's.
So what was that like when you were a teenager? That must have been super confusing.
Yeah, it was. I grew up in a small town in the middle of nowhere, a couple thousand people, and nobody had heard of Crohn's. And so it was challenging, but for the most part, I was on medication and it went into remission. And okay. So for most of my teens, I was pretty okay.
Yeah.
The odd time, a little flare here and there. But it wasn't until my 20s, in my early 20s, when it showed up with vengeance. It was like, I'm here, pay attention to me or else. And yeah, it was that in my 20s when I had my first surgery, where so much scar tissue, so much inflammation, that there's no other option but to take part of my intestine out at that time.
Wow. And your first surgery?
First surgery, yeah, in my 20s. And then we thought, okay, surgery is going to be good. I'm going to be fine. And within weeks, I was battling internal bleeding and excruciating pain. But we found a medication. I was referred to a GI clinic, and the doctors there, so amazing, and was put on a medication. I made some lifestyle changes, and my Crohn's went into remission for quite a long time, up until about 4 years ago, when it was like, hey, by the way, I'm here
again. I'm back.
So for like 10, 15 years, I'd go for medication every 8 weeks and IV treatment. And that was the extent of me living with Crohn's. It was, you know, there are a couple decent bouts of internal bleeding, which would come and then go as quickly as they came on. And so not enough to say, hey, is this medication working? But enough to go, hey, okay, I still live with this
disease. Yeah, this is like a thing in my life that I have to pay attention to. When you were in your teens, what was the medication? Was it also the IV, or was it something different?
No, honestly, I can't remember the name of it. It was an oral medication that I took regularly. And at the time, biologics weren't, IV medications weren't even around or on the market yet.
Oh, interesting. Because I was going to say, I only know about the IV medications for Crohn's. I've never heard of like an oral medication.
Yeah, it was an oral medication just to reduce the inflammation at the time. And whether it worked or my body decided, okay, we're just going to give you a break. Not quite sure, because, you know, I was in my teens. I was not eating well, and so wasn't really taking care of myself in that way at that time. But yeah, it wasn't until
most teenagers aren't, right?
Yeah, it's like, oh, I'm not going to watch what I put in my body. And
yeah, you kind of feel like invisible. Like invincible.
Yeah. Invincible. Yeah. So I'm just gonna like live my life, and for the most part I did. And
yeah.
And then in my 20s I put on a biologic that was pretty new to the market, and I had no idea what a biologic was, and but I just knew it worked. And it, you know, probably I would say, you know, saved a lot of my life, to be honest. Gave me a quality of life back that I didn't know existed. So,
oh, that's great. Yeah. Can you, if you're comfortable sharing, would you mind sharing about like before you had your first surgery, and, you know, after the medication that you were taking in your teens kind of stopped working? What was your experience like during that time?
Yeah, I had lived with a number of flares on and off. And to be honest, I didn't really attribute to me living with Crohn's. I just knew something that I had. I did not do my research. I just knew I had this disease. And it wasn't until that flare up in my 20s, for that really big flare up, was, okay, this is a wake up call. I was working in an industrial setting. I hadn't been feeling well for a few days, but I thought I should go to work. You know, I don't want to take a whole week off. And I went to work, and I was in no shape to be there. I collapsed in a setting where, if I didn't fall the right way, I probably would have lost my life. And
oh my God.
Rushed to the hospital, and there was so much scar tissue in my abdomen on my right side that it had attached itself to different organs, and which was then causing more issues. And so Yeah, it was. I think that was the big wake up call of this is a serious disease, and it's time to put some focus on this.
Wow, is it? Do you know if it's common? Because you keep mentioning your right side. Is it common for people with Crohn's to have it be sort of concentrated in particular parts of their digestive tract, or do you not know?
I don't know.
I'm curious about that.
Yeah, I'm curious as well. I've met people who have similar areas, like where the small and large intestine join together. Mm-hmm. That seems to be a favorite spot for Crohn's disease to come up. But I've also talked with people who deal with it further down in their intestine, or I've met somebody a few weeks ago who deals with it further up their digestive tract. So. But yeah, I know for me, it's primarily on that right side, you know, where the small and large intestine come together. There's even a regulator valve in there just to, you know, simplify it. Mine is gone. My second surgery, really? Which happened not that long ago, less than a year ago, they had to take all of that piece out. It was just too far gone.
I didn't even know about, this is kind of a funny aside, but like, I didn't even know about that connector piece between the large and small intestine until recently myself, because I have endometriosis. And in my most recent surgery, I learned that I had a ton of endometriosis, like in that little valve, I guess you called it, which is a good, you know, like simplified term for it. And I was like, what? I didn't even know this was a thing. Yeah. So yikes, it sounds like that was like a real problem area for you too.
Yeah, it still is. I had my second
even with
surgery,
it removed?
Even with it removed, I'm on like currently on a medication, and here in Canada it was recently approved about a year and a bit ago, and it's just not working as it should. And so my Crohn's is giving me some issues. And yeah, without going into details, but we're all going into some details because I don't have shame talking about it. You know, it's
whatever it you're causes, comfortable with.
It causes me to run to the washroom a lot. Mm-hmm. And I plan my outings around where washrooms are right now. So I was told after the second surgery that, you know, go to the washroom, you know, four, maybe six times a day is likely normal. And I was okay with that, but it's.
Yeah.
That sense of urgency, which, you know, is not just on the physical side, but it also plays a mental game with,
oh yeah,
how can I leave my house? If I'm going to leave my house, where am I going to go? And yeah, so it's definitely challenging on.
Yeah. There's that sense of like panic when it happens, like, oh my God, like what do? I have to get somewhere right now. And then there's that also that sense of dread, like before, because you're constantly anticipating, is this going to happen? Is it going to happen? To your point, like, okay, how do I leave my house? Where's the bathroom? Everywhere I go, I have to be prepared for, I know where something is if I need to literally like sprint to the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, some people who live with Crohn's, they've been treated and they're in a different quality of life than I am. And so I just know that this is, you know, my normal and how I'm living with it right now. And but I also know that I want some quality of life, and I am advocating hard with my doctors and my care practitioners to figure out like, what can we do? How can we get to a place where I can get back outdoors and biking and hiking and doing the things that I love and in some capacity.
Yeah. So you mentioned after your first surgery that you had like a really long time of, you know, going to get treatment every 8 weeks and absolutely having flare-ups and having to deal with your Crohn's on a regular basis. But you said you had a quality of life that you hadn't even known was possible. When did that change? And do your doctors know like what caused the change?
Yeah, I was told with biologics, your body will build up the antibodies at some point.
Oh.
So at some point, your body will likely reject the medication or it will stop working.
Oh, man.
And I'd asked throughout the years, like, hey, I'm feeling fine. Can I stop the medication? And the doctors always said, you know, of course, it's your body. You could do what you want. But our advice is don't, because if you need this medication, you can't go back to the one that's been working.
Why?
It's your body builds up that immunity to that medication, that builds up a response to it. So I was told that, hey, if you come off this medication, the chances of it working again are very slim, because your body is building up those antibodies towards this medication.
That's so interesting. So, if you stay on it, it'll potentially keep working. But if you go off of it and try to go back on, it'll stop working.
That's what I was told, is it won't work.
So counterintuitive. As well.
It seems like that, right? But it was like, I was like, well, why don't I just take medication when I'm in a flare? And they said, well, what if this medication is keeping you out of a flare state?
Yeah.
So staying out of that flare state was my goal and my doctor's goal. And for over 10 years, we were in that place until, it was about four years ago, three, 4 years ago, when it was just around Christmas, and I was like, I'm not feeling well. Like, something is going on in my body. And sure enough, we did a scope, and my almost top to bottom was inflamed. And so we tried different medications, and different treatments, high dose steroids to bring down the inflammation, multiple rounds of steroids.
That's rough on the body too.
The physical and mental state of steroid, that was hard. I would find myself waking up at 2 a.m. with so much manic energy, and I would just, my outlet was baking. I got to a point where my kids were like, please stop baking us. we don't want any more baking. And so I developed a recipe in that time of like tweaking different recipes to come up with my own. And I call it my manic muffin recipe. it was a journey of trying to get the disease back under control, which was unsuccessful for the most part. It was just over a year ago, we're recording this, it was December of 2022, where my doctor, I was there with my wife, and he sat me down and said, you need surgery, but you're too sick for surgery.
Oh my God.
And I was losing too much blood. My too much inflammation. The surgeon said, yeah, Tim, if we go in, there's nowhere to connect your intestine to because it's all inflamed.
Oh no.
And so we want to try and save part of your intestine. So we need to get this under control. So that's when another round of very high steroids came in, medication and, blood transfusion, bi-weekly iron infusions at one point my iron levels didn't even register.
And oh my God.
Trying to explain that to someone who just would say, oh, you look really tired. Like, yeah, it's because I have no iron in my body. Yeah,
so I have no iron, and my entire digestive tract is all inflamed it's my messed God. Up.
And so yeah, it was just on a path to get healthy enough for surgery, and successful surgery, but we're still navigating new medication and things like that. And I know somebody might be listening to this of like, wasn't there a cure? And whatever social media says, there isn't a cure for Crohn's. You might be able to put your Crohn's in a remission state,
remission,
but there is
right.
no cure. And I eat very well. We eat very clean, and I know what works for my body and what doesn't. And the amount of diet tips I've gotten over the years, if I ate that, it'll probably kill me, but thank you.
thanks for your advice. It's funny because it's always well-meaning, and it's just so frustrating because it's interesting. And your voice, I almost heard there like a little bit of a defensiveness. Like, I eat well, I know what's right for my body. And that's totally understandable because I think as someone who experiences chronic illness myself, I have had endless amounts of unsolicited advice about diet and exercise. And there's that temptation to be like, I'm doing everything right. Like, I swear I'm taking care of myself. I'm not just like being cavalier with my body and my health. And it's hard, I think, for people to understand that you can do everything 100% quote unquote right. that you know is good for your body, that has worked for your body in the past, and for no reason whatsoever, you can have a horrible flare-up.
Absolutely. And it's interesting you picked up that little bit of defensiveness. And and I find myself having to throw that in there because I've had, and maybe you've had as well, so much of that unsolicited advice.
Yeah.
And I tell people I know it often comes with no ill intent.
Right.
The words that are used have an impact. And yeah. So I've gone into organizations and actually spoken on this exact topic because if somebody said, "Hey, Katie, you look tired. You should rest a little bit more." Or, "Are you sure you're drinking enough water? You know, you need to drink." It's like, don't tell me that, please. You know,
yeah.
I appreciate that. Actually, I don't even appreciate that. Just don't tell me.
Yeah, it's hard because you're right. It is always, I feel like, well-intentioned, but it's that sort of like constant barrage that just wears you down so much, especially when you're like, I am doing so much and everything I can to just get through the day. And like, there are times when I've been like, okay, I can't eat between this hour, and I have certain things I can eat. And, you know, like just so scientifically like puzzled together. And so then to have someone just cavalierly be like, "Hey, have you like, you know, tried gluten-free diet?" And I'm like, oh my God, I would like to murder you right now. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's like that extra like, oh, are you taking care of yourself? And it's so frustrating when you're spending all of your time and energy taking care of yourself.
Yeah, it was last year when I was in full flare and my intestine was, I tell people it was like half the width of my pinky.
Oh my God.
It was so closed up. Like my surgeon was surprised anything was passing through wow. that piece of intestine. That's how closed off it was. And I would have people saying, "Hey, oh, you have a flare up? Have you tried going all raw vegetables?" I was like, "Man, yeah, that would kill me." Like literally.
Yeah, literally.
And somebody would said, "You know what? Going carnivore had solved all my immunity problems." I'm like, "Man, my body can't digest that." So yeah, I was living off of meal supplements, like things like Ensure.
Like Ensure, yeah.
It's like when you're consuming like 8 to 12 Ensures a day just to put on calories.
Yeah.
I don't do that from a place of choice.
No.
I would love to eat that steak or that. I love salad. And
yeah.
But you can't. And so while it comes from often, again, no ill intent, man, yeah, I just sometimes just want to lose it.
Yeah.
It was, I think for me, what the kicker for me, it was a week before surgery. And we're standing there at church and this person come up and said, "Hey, I hear you're not feeling well." I'm like, "Yeah, that's an understatement." And and was like, "You know, I hear you're going for surgery. Well, you look really good."
God.
And I was like, I know that comes with so much passion and support, but I'm like, man, it's so not validating. And that it off, what I found for myself, it plants seeds of doubt of, am I?
Are you really sick? Yeah.
Do I need this life-saving surgery? And
am I being dramatic? That, am I taking too big of a step? Is there something else more minor I could be doing? Oh my God. Yeah.
I'm curious, like have you had that experience? Sounds like you've had that experience as well.
Absolutely, you don't look sick. Especially like you're so young, you know, you're so young, you're so put together, you know, you always look good and, you know, like, and I'm like, great. Like that's cool. But like, I'm miserable. I'm barely getting through the days. And so what does it mean that I don't look sick, that I'm too young, quote unquote, to be this sick? Like the fact is I am. So like what is that supposed to do for me? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's sprinkle some ignorance and some ageism in there and some micro discriminations. And let's just, you know, a little bit of gaslighting on top of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there you go.
Yeah. Oh man. Okay. So then you had your second surgery. How did that go?
Surgery went well. It I mean, it took out the piece of intestine. They had to take more than they wanted. But for the most part, yeah, I mean, I went in not being able to eat. And you know, weeks later, I celebrated successful surgery by eating a burger, which is one of my all-time favorite things. And
that's huge.
And so, you know, just being able to have some quality of life back, some energy back. Like, somebody might be listening to this and think, now, what does it feel like to not have any iron in your body? So just think of, you know, staying up for 4 or 5 days straight and think of the energy you have, which is nothing. It's hard to think. It's hard to put together sentences and words and put yourself together. And so being able to hop on my bike with my kids and go for a bike ride, and it was life-changing. It was. I don't know how else to describe it. Quality of life back that I hadn't had for years. And, you know, I would have little bouts of reduction in flares throughout the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I was able to get out and do some things, but it often took a significant amount of effort. So if I would go for a hike, man, I'd be down for days afterwards just to help. My body just needed that just rejuvenation. Recover. Yeah. That recovery time. So
I both want to say, like, I know that you mentioned you're still having issues post-surgery. So I am very cautious of never being like, yay, you're fixed. Like, obviously that's not a thing. And Crohn's doesn't have a cure, as you said. And it sounds like you're still dealing with a lot. But I also just want to say, I'm so glad that you were able to get a procedure that was so helpful for you and has given you, it sounds like, a good amount of quality of life that you haven't had for several years. I'm really, really glad.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I have an amazing specialist, and I know here in Canada, our healthcare works a little different than in the US and other places in the world.
Much better.
And, you know, I have a great family doctor, in which I know is a privilege as well. And, whenever I have an issue, I call my specialist office. I don't need to go for through referrals. And at my specialist office, they have dietitian support and mental health support. And his nurse is on standby for anything. And so
that's
great. Just did some tests, and some things are concerning in the blood work, and I don't know how to interpret them. But I know I'll call his office, and I'll get answers. And so
that's awesome.
That wasn't always the case. It was a lot of advocacy of, I'm not feeling well and something needs to change. Doctor, what are you going to do? Oh, well, we'll wait and see. It's like, we've waited and seen for long enough. What are we going to do? And on the podcast that I host, I interviewed a doctor. She's Dr. Maureen. She's a 20-year physician, been in the U.S. military, and she wrote a book really talking about how to advocate for yourself and for others, and how to disagree with your doctor, which I found very interesting. Here's a doctor coming on telling us how to disagree with her, and how if you're not happy, or you don't understand what your doctor is telling you, or you don't understand the results of your tests, don't turn to Dr. Google or whatever search engine you're using, because it'll tell you it's nothing or you're going to die.
Right.
so, you know, there's really no in between. It's like, oh, it's nothing, or you need to go to the emergency right now. It's asking questions. And even if you don't know what questions to ask, tell your doctor, hey, I don't even know what questions to ask. What should I be asking? This doesn't feel right. I don't feel like I used to. What is going on? Something is going on. And it's not, you advocate once and you get a response. It might take days and years. And I've met someone who advocated for themselves for over eight years and finally had a surgery that gave her relief that she hasn't experienced in her entire son's life. And so, over 8 years of pushing and pushing and pushing, and finally got an answer, which led to brain surgery, which led to a phenomenal improvement. So If you're listening to this, you gotta push, right? You gotta
It's so frustrating because as someone, you know, going through such a difficult physical condition that then also impacts greatly your mental and emotional health as well, it's so exhausting to, on top of that, have to constantly push for better care, different care, more tests. Like I told you I have endometriosis. It took me 15 years to get a diagnosis because I went to dozens of different doctors, including GIs. I had many colonoscopies because they thought I might have Crohn's. And, you know, was just told every time, like, oh, well, the tests all came back negative. Like, you're fine. And I, to your point about pushing and pushing and pushing, I had to keep pushing and pushing and pushing. And even after I finally found my first surgeon, had a surgery, I was told that I did not have endometriosis. And it wasn't until the biopsies came back positive, and then I realized like he didn't actually remove most of it. It's like, even when you think you've found someone to listen to you and something that's going to help, you still have to advocate and push and ask questions. And it's exhausting, but it's extremely necessary.
It is. It's exhausting and it's hard. And I've talked with numerous people who don't know where to start.
Yeah.
And are still living in that place, maybe of shame, of that place of why me, in that place of fear of, okay, I need to talk to someone, or maybe I need to tell my friends or family or coworkers or classmates. And there's too much fear wrapped in that. So for me, it had taken a lot of internal work to overcome that and just to say, you know what, I'm tired of hiding. I'm tired of not feeling well. And so, for somebody who's might be listening and is really struggling with that, we hear you, we get it. And there's power in that advocacy and power that you kind of give yourself of like, I'm not okay. And I need to get answers. But I also know with Crohn's, I call it, this is my normal. My normal is running to the washroom up to 12 times a day, which is different than your normal, which is different than my friend's normal. And I've come to a place of accepting that this is my normal. So now what?
Right.
What then?
Right.
And it takes a lot of work to get to that place, I think. But it's
important. Oh my gosh. It is. And also, at least in my experience, it's a pretty consistent process of having to recalibrate, because your normal, you know, for 5 years might change. And then so you're like, oh my gosh, okay, I have whether it's better or worse, a new normal that you have to then understand and advocate for. And so, yeah, it's just, I mean, the amount of mental and emotional energy that goes into just the constant monitoring of oneself is very difficult to explain to people who haven't experienced it.
It is. And I'm curious how, if you have practices in your life that help you each day. You know, I think for me, when I wake up in the morning, I kind of do a self health check of how am I feeling? Like physically, how am I feeling? Like, I also live with arthritis. The last week and a half have been horrible. Today, not so bad. I could walk down the stairs without much pain. So check on that. How am I doing mentally? It's like, well, I'll be completely honest. The day we're recording this, it started off probably out of 4 out of 10, feeling quite low, feeling energized now. But, you know, taking stock of how you're doing is important. But not, for me, it's not stopping there. It's like, okay, I'm a 4. What am I going to do today? Do I want to get to a 6? Because I know I'm not going to get to a 10. So what can I do to get to a 6? Or even a 4.5?
Right.
Like, okay, I'm going to make sure I'm going to go for my walk. I'm going to reach out to a friend and have a good conversation about living with chronic illness and not hear advice about diets and how much water I should drink. You know, what are those little things to fill up that day so I can, you know, for me, so I can go to bed feeling a little bit in a better place.
Yeah, it's so important. And I think it is. It is something that comes with a lot of practice and a lot of trial and error, right? Like you can try certain things and they might work or not in different ways. And a part of the work that I do with coaching people is helping them come up with their own versions of that. Like what actually works for you to, you know, is it a body scan when you wake up in the morning? Is it like, you know, really assessing on a scale of 1 to 10 how your mental state is? And yeah, I think that that not only recognition, which is so critically important, but to your point, the next step of like, okay, what do I want to do with this information that I just realized is so important.
Yeah, it's like, you know, thinking about, you know, back to university days or high school days or even in the workplace, you're learning something new. Now, what are you going to do? How are you going to apply that?
Right.
And so for me, it's how am I going to apply how I'm feeling and how am I going to shift that? Or if I'm reading about anxiety and how to overcome anxiety, how do you put that into practice? And I'm reading a great book. It's a classic leadership book called Atomic Habits. And
I have that on my shelf.
And I've had it on my shelf for a long time. And in a book club with a few people. And so we're starting to read this and it talks about the 1% shift. And it's like, okay, if you're living with something, a chronic illness, and you say, oh, I'm going to get healthy by the end of the year.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
that just
you're just setting yourself up to fail.
Exactly. So what is that 1% shift? What is that one thing to do today that is going to cascade over time? And even just, you know, halfway through the first chapter of the book, I'm like, oh, this is changing the game of breaking down something that is so daunting of like, okay, I need to find a new doctor.
Okay. Oh my God.
What do you need to do today to work towards finding that new doctor? Maybe it's getting your medical records. Maybe it's doing some research. Maybe it's whatever that is breaking it down into something that's tangible.
Yeah, which is so empowering too, because then you feel like when you actually complete that 1% shift, you're like, oh, I did this thing. And I feel like, especially with a chronic illness, it's funny, I was thinking about this when you were talking about your manic muffins. Like, there's so much you can't control that I think, for me at least, like having something that you can take from beginning to end, like cooking, like baking, those do this for me. But also, I think if you have like a 1% shift you're trying to make, that's tangible. You can start and you can stop. And that makes you feel so good because there's so much of your environment and your physical health and that you can't control. And so it's just like the best feeling in the world to be able to actually like do something.
It is. And I think about it from, let's say you need to ask for an accommodation at school or in the workplace or even with a family member. It's like, okay, I need to ask my boss for an accommodation. That could seem like a daunting goal.
Yeah.
But even writing it down of, okay, what do I need to ask for? Doing some research, providing some opportunities, some suggestions, and breaking even that big daunting thing down into something that's manageable. It's easy to say. It's easy for me to say. I do some contract work, but mainly I'm, you know, working for myself. So it's easy. It's easy to say, like, this is what to do. But I also know it works. And breaking it down. When you're talking with your doctor, when you're talking with family, friends, you know, and crystallizing on, you know, not necessarily what the problem is, but what you need. I think it's important.
So tell me about how you shifted from, you said you were in the corporate world and now you run this amazing nonprofit. How did that happen?
I wish there was some good big story, but honestly, it was me tired of hiding how I was feeling and doing. And I had worked, my background is operations and HR, and I took a strange pivot into digital publications that really focused on leadership and HR. So I helped build a pretty substantial leadership publication. And at that time, I got some experience with podcasting and I thought, I'm looking for an outlet. I need an outlet. So I decided, I'm going to start a little podcast, tell some stories, and just leave it at that. It's called Invisible Condition or invisiblecondition.com. And very quickly, complete strangers started reaching out to me saying, maybe, I'm sure you've had this as well. Hey, I reach out to you as a complete stranger, right?
It's so exciting.
It's like, hey, I love what you're doing. How can I support you?
Oh, that's awesome.
How can I tell my story? It's time for me to tell my story. So only a few months ago, I decided, you know what? I'm going to devote about 70% of my time, 70, 80% of my time into building this nonprofit. And I come from a for-profit world. So this is new to me.
Yeah.
I'm still figuring it out as a solopreneur, so to speak, doing it. I've got my board. I've got a few people supporting, but it's, you know, the goal is really to tell stories, to help people advocate for themselves. And anything that any money that comes in is going directly back into this project. And yeah, here in Canada, the process is getting a nonprofit status and then going for charity status with the government. And so that's mm-hmm. the goal. That's what we're raising money for right now, is to help cover some of those legal fees. But yeah, it's been pretty amazing to connect with complete strangers who, even in the last short period of time, people who are going to write content, help me build out a content plan for the site.
Oh, awesome.
With somebody who's a donation copywriter who writes donation proposals for, you know, in the realm of significant money, and she's going to devote some time to this. And so it's been pretty amazing to see this community wanting to support and wanting to say, enough's enough. We are going to end the stigma of invisible conditions and create a place where my kids or other people's children, if they live with something that's not apparent, there's no shame and no fear of sharing.
Yeah.
Instead, their bosses in their workplace would say, thanks for trusting me with this. What do you need to support to do your best? And move on.
Right. So not make it,
that, but we're going to get
there.
Oh my
God, we're so far from that. Like, not make it nothing, not make it scary to tell, but not make it everything either. Like, this person is not the illness that they just told you they have. And I think that's a lot of people that I've talked to, that the fear, or like, that's, you know, they've had some bad experiences sharing with people, or they feel like they need to hide what their condition is. And I really do understand that. And also, you know, in a way that's just perpetuating the current situation. So I think the work you're doing is amazing. So you have the podcast. What other like avenues or outlets do you use to do the work you're doing?
Yeah. So a little shameless plug, the Invisible Condition podcast. Go and check it out. Thanks for allowing me to do that.
Of course.
Also, the website, we're building out significant resources there on things like self-advocacy, but also documentation or articles that relate to workplace. And they're not specific for HR departments. I would love people to take these articles and print them off and hand them to your HR department and say, this is what we need to do. I'm just finishing up an article on disability hiring practices and taking that into creating an inclusive hiring process to support people with disabilities, especially when it's not apparent. So there's that avenue. Another avenue we're working on, and I've got a team of wonderful HR volunteers, is they're creating a disability inclusion in the workplace, just a one pager, a downloadable. And out of that, we're going to create some presentations that, again, HR teams can download for a donation. Got to sustain this. And be able to then slap your logo on this and take it to your exec team and say, this is what we need to do. So
that's awesome.
That's a fun project. And I just talked to a volunteer today about this silly idea that I have about creating one of the largest databases of invisible conditions, and categorizing them in specific categories, the specific condition, the definition, an online resource, an online community. So if you're looking for your people, that's where you can go, as
oh my
well
God,
as
I love that.
Example accommodations in the workplace and school. So I'm up to well over 200, 250 invisible conditions. It's not going to be complete, but I want this to be open source so we can continue to add to it.
That's awesome. So
that is hopefully going to come out, I would say, probably in the next couple months, because it's pretty lofty goal.
That's a huge lift, but also it's so important. I mean, I know just from my own experience, like, I didn't know how to find the information I didn't have for the longest time. And so if there's like a place where you can go and like a hub where you can look up your condition and what are some communities I can check out, what are some resources, if I can actually help with that in any way, I would love to, because the whole point of me doing my podcast is to help sort of share people share their stories and feel less alone, and also, you know, get accurate information. And I feel like it's so hard to find and it's so isolating. So I would love to lift that up. It sounds like an incredible resource.
Oh, yeah. I think you and I are going to have multiple conversations after this recording. I think, you know, we're doing similar work. And I was talking with a few people last week who just want to connect with others outside of their condition.
Yeah.
Who are living with that diagnosis journey, or living with how to advocate. Because I belong to a Crohn's support group, and it's amazing. The things we talk about can be talked across every condition. And I know I'm generalizing, but it's a broad statement, but I firmly believe that. And so how can we do more across condition? And you know, that's something that's in the back of my mind, whether that is online community or support. I don't know what that's going to look like yet, but it will look like something in the future as well. So
So funny. I've been thinking the same exact thing. Like, all the people I talk to, we all deal with different conditions, but there's so many shared experiences and shared, I mean, like you and I were laughing about, you know, people trying to tell us how much water to drink. Like, those are shared experiences that many, many, many of us have. And it would be incredible to find a way to, help more people connect. I'm really a fan of the work you're doing, Tim.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It's, I'm tired. I'll be completely honest. And I take on more than I can handle. And so I have to figure that out. And, but I'm just excited, just I think as you are, to tell stories, to, elevate voices, to give people, insights and actionable takeaways to be able to take to their friends and family and coworkers. And it's just more of us need to be doing this. And so I applaud you for taking on your work as well, because it's challenging. It's challenging
Thank
work,
you.
Especially managing your own condition and the work and work outside of just producing a podcast, which in itself is a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I mean, in a way, it reminds me of the conversation we just had about, you know, a daunting goal versus a 1% shift, because there's so much room to grow in this space. Like, we, as you said, we have so far to go before we're at a place where someone can just tell their boss a condition they live with and the boss is like, great, how can I help? Move on. So in a way, that feels very, very daunting. And then in a way, you know, getting to talk to people like you and talking to other folks who deal with different conditions and the things they're doing in their own personal lives, it's also so exciting to think about what the possibilities are.
Yeah, I've found that there's a lot of fear in publicly telling your story. Yeah. And I've had numerous guests say, I didn't know if I wanted to share. I was almost backed out. And then I hear from guests saying, I'm so glad I did, because it has opened up new opportunities, new conversations. I've now made some really great friends out of this. And that's the whole point, right? There is power in our story. And it takes a lot of courage and vulnerability. And I get that. And I wake up, it was a few weeks ago before recording this, I woke up and went, I need to take down my LinkedIn posts, because if I need to get a job, I don't know if I'll get discriminated against, because I'm very outspoken on LinkedIn, especially on LinkedIn, just on disability inclusion. And so I almost deleted everything and thought, okay, I'm not going to let this fear overtake me. So I feel it. I'm in that fear. For me, I've decided to just put that fear in the back and say, you know what? But there's also hope. And I recently landed a contract. I was looking for a one-day-a-week contract and I landed a one-day-a-week contract. And
nice.
And she knows that I live with Crohn's. And she said, how can I support you? What do you need? And so if you're afraid, there's also people out there who will just applaud you and embrace you and accept you and hire you and promote you. So
yeah.
we're going to continue to tell more of those stories.
That's awesome. All right. Well, I feel like that's a really good place to leave it, but I also want to give you space if there's any other message or I usually ask at the end, you know, what's something that you wish you had known when you were a teenager or in your 20s that now you know that you would want other people to know?
Spend time finding your voice, finding what works for you, finding ways to tell your story. And it doesn't have to be a polished story. It could be a raw story. But don't let your fear overtake your story. Embrace what makes you your version of normal. Because I'm a normal person and embrace that.
I love that. Thank you so much for talking to me, Tim. This was an amazing conversation.
I appreciate it. Thank you. And I look forward to hosting you on the Invisible Condition podcast in the future as well.
Thanks. Hey there. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Tim. I had a great time talking to him and I'm such a big fan of the work he's doing. You can find him and his work at invisiblecondition.com or listen to his podcast where he has people share their stories, much like this podcast, the Invisible Condition podcast. And if you're interested in learning more about me and about coaching, you can find me on my website at reviveandthrivecoach.com. You can look at my Instagram at Revive and Thrive Coaching, and you can email me at Katie at reviveandthrivecoach.com. See you next time.